Hello, welcome back to the David Watson podcast. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Seema, who is a medical practitioner who, for a long time before anyone else was doing it, saw that the way that medical treatments had gone was not the right way. A man who realized that there were better ways to help people heal, and that given an opportunity, the body will do a fantastic job of healing itself, physically and mentally. And it's all to do with not just what you consume in terms of how you eat and exercise, but also how you feed in your mind. And I thoroughly enjoyed talking to him. Hello, welcome to the David Watson podcast. It's very nice to meet you, and thank you very much for coming on. How are you?
I'm doing well today, David. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm very good. And I've been looking forward to this, because why don't we start with you explain to everybody who exactly you are and what it is you do?
Well, do you want me to go back from the beginning? Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
I was one of the first waves of baby boomers, and living in New York at the time in Queens. And in an area called Bayside. And it was a kind of lower middle income family oriented neighborhood where you had a lot of mostly Catholic people, but you had Irish, Italian, German, Polish, English. You had a whole bunch of people because they was at that time was, New York City was the melting pot. And so I got to learn a lot about all different cultures and all different people. We had Black neighborhoods, became friendly with a lot of the Black kids. And we had, in areas where we would go and hang out. And then there were times and places where we really couldn't hang out. But I was also moved to another area where it was predominantly a Jewish population. So I got along with pretty much everybody. I learned to get along with everybody. It was a little bit tough. And then, during my childhood years, living in those kinds of neighborhoods, you had to be pretty tough. You had to fight. I mean, you walk out of your apartment, you knew you were getting into a fight. It wasn't like if, it was when. You just walk off the street or somebody's just going to pick a fight with you no matter what. So I kind of learned how to fight and protect myself. And, from there, I got a lot into boxing in the police athletic league and kind of really learned, how to take care of myself, which is a lot of fun because you felt really comfortable being out in the streets, and knowing how to protect yourself was really important. And you'd also hang around with people, in gangs and things like that. They call them gangs, but it was a way that you needed to like survive in the neighborhood. If you had the right friends, you didn't have to worry about a lot of things. If you didn't, you'd have to worry. And so, not me in particular, but I had, like, for example, one of my best friends at the time, without even going into a lot of detail, by the time we were 12, I think his brother was about 18. They wound up killing a police officer, in a robbery. And so they went to prison at an early age. And I kind of got to know like those kinds of people too, as well, whether it was like, the tough guys, the zombies, that's what they call themselves, the Bayside Zombies, very fitting name. Yeah. And so you grew up around these people, and it was kind of like, it was good because you kind of like, you were an oral, but at the same time, these people played for keeps. It wasn't like you weren't going to get away with things. They would wind up killing you. And so my choice was like, again, hanging out with a lot of, not so normal people, I decided that I was going to just focus on school as much as possible. So not that I got the greatest grades, but at least I got to a point in high school where I was kind of able to, I'll tell you the story so you'll see it firsthand. So it was at the time, we're in the height of the Vietnam War. And my mother's telling me, what are you going to do when you graduate? And I said, Ma, I don't know. I said, maybe I'll be a mechanic. She goes, no, I want you to go to college. So I said, let's go. She wanted to talk to my grade advisor. So we go to my grade advisor, nice Italian man. And my mother says to him, she says, Mr. So-and-so, she goes, I want my son to go to college. So he takes out my transcripts. David, he's looking at him. And I'm like, it was like probably a D+ student. I wasn't a great student. So he goes to my mother. He goes, Mrs. Seaman, your son's not college material. He won't make it in college. And my mother, being the mother she was, she says, "I don't care. I want him to go to college." So he says to me, he goes, "Well, what do you want? What do you like?" So I said, "I like animals. I mean, I always studied. I mean, that was my father was an avid hunter, so I'd study and, go hunting with him. I'd learn about all the different animals and the birds, and kind of had a really good firsthand knowledge of, animals, and I loved them." So he says, "Do you think about you want to be a vet?" I said, "Yeah, that sounds like a good idea." So he goes rifling through these file cabinets. There was no computers back then, just rifling through these. He finally, like a minute or so, I lost track of time. He goes, "I think there's one college you can get into. I mean, only one. There's a possibility you can get into it." He goes, "But you'll have to take an aptitude test." So I said, "No, fine, I'll do that and we'll see what happens." So he tells me, he tells me where when I have to do the test and do the test, and I passed. I don't even know how I passed, but I did pass. And I said to myself that day, I said, "I'm going to college and I'm going to make something of myself. I'm not going to like haphazardly study. I want to be a doctor, but I want to be a really good doctor, not just like a typical doctor." So I started my career in pre-vet. And from 2 years, it was an agricultural school, it was Farmingdale University. And from there, I matriculated to Cornell. From Cornell, I graduated in the top 25% of my class. And so I kind of looked back and I said, "Wow," I said, "for a guy that was in college material, you didn't do bad."
Yeah, it's
So
good.
now, yeah, so now I'm teaching. I'm teaching all girls parochial high school applying to vet schools. And so as I'm applying to vet schools, I had, I'll just, set back a little bit, but I wound up at the age of 15 hurting my back really bad, shooting a shotgun. And it was at the point where I would get so bad that I couldn't get off the floor. And, but then it would go away, but then it would come back, it would go away, it would come back, it would go away. But as I was graduating now college, now in my early 20s, it was getting worse. And I was laying on the floor in my girlfriend's house at the time, and I was in severe pain. And her father's friend, a gruff Italian guy, walks over to me. He goes, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "My back is killing me." He looks at me. He goes, "Don't worry, it's going to get worse as you get older." He steps over me and walks out the front door. And I'm like, "You know what? He's right. It's gotten bad. I'm 23, 24. And Dave, I'm telling you, I don't know if you ever had back pain, but
Yeah, a few times.
when you can't get off the floor and you're 22 and you know that this is getting worse, and you just gotta say, I gotta do something." And somebody, one of the teachers at the school recommended that I go see a chiropractor. So I said, "Well, what did, I didn't even know what they did." So she started to explain to me what it was. She goes, "Well, you're a science teacher. You might as well, go to chiropractic school. You're going, you're pre-vet major. They have the same, curriculum pretty much. And you have the same, college requirements that you would require to be any kind of a doctor." So I applied to chiropractic school at the time, got accepted, and then went. And then when I went to chiropractic school, it was like, it was an eye-opening experience because I was like more medically oriented. And I was never more into health as a kid. You run around, you play. I ate a lot of crap, drank a lot of soda. I didn't really, have a really good diet. Even though my mother was a great cook, I wouldn't eat home. I would just, eat junk food all the time. So when I got into chiropractic school, I realized like, hey, I have to make some changes over here as to taking care of my health and all the rest because I'm going to be in the health field. So as I went through chiropractic school, now I'm in like the top 5% of my class. Because I studied like extensively so hard, I was like unbelievable. So as I was graduating chiropractic school, I saw a quote from Thomas Edison. And it said, "The doctor of the future will prescribe no medication, but interest his patients in diet, care of the human frame, and the cause and prevention of disease." And I looked at that statement, I said, "That's what I want to be." It was like,
Nice.
when they say to you when you're a kid, "Johnny, what do you want to be when you grow up?" I don't know, policeman, fireman, president of the United States, whatever it was like, bam, hit me. That's what I'm going to be, a doctor of the future. And the thing was, here I am graduating school. There's no book on the doctor of the future. There's no course that they could give you. There was nothing that was written, but it kind of like laid out a blueprint of what a doctor of the future would be. He'd have to be, he'd have to be well, knowledgeable in nutrition, well knowledgeable in the care of the body, whether it's being from exercise or treatment of the physical body and the cause and prevention of disease. And the other part that I had added to it is that in order to be totally functionally from a health standpoint, you got to be mentally, emotionally balanced. So health was a chemical, physical, and mental, emotional triumph where you have each side builds on the next. So when people talk about, well, you know, I have a really good diet. Well, most of the time that's not true, but there's also the physical aspect of health, which is, you know, there's a body of science called physics, and then there's also a body of science called chemistry for the chemical side of the body, and the mental emotional side kind of runs the whole thing, so to speak. And so in order to be balanced health-wise, you have this chemical, physical, mental, emotional balance. And so that's what I spent the majority of the next, well, let's say 50 years of my life pursuing, you know, writing on it. And I wrote books for the professional as well as the general population to say to people, look, this is what you need to be well. There's so much crap on the, you know, whether it is on TV or on the internet about like, this is a great supplement, take this, or grows hair on the cue ball. They run all this crap on you. It's like, it's pretty much a lie. It's that, you know, you have, like, if you look at the overall health, it's, there's no one thing out there that's going to make you healthy. It's like balancing yourself chemically, balancing yourself physically and mentally, emotionally, and then you'll be healthy. But trying to take a supplement or, oh, I'll do this exercise, and like, that's just a bunch of crap. I know, I've been living it for 50 years. I see what's out there. I can see all the, you know, garbage. So back in 1980, I'm finally getting up to, you know, I guess where we're going to be going. Back around 1980, at the time, I was engaged to my wife, Gloria. And so we decided to move out of New York and move to Florida because I felt like Florida was a more healthy place to be. We'd be getting away from our family and our friends, which would make us better because we would grow. And we came down in 1980 and I started my practice. And within the first few months, I wasn't doing so well. And then I went to some practice management seminars because they don't teach you in school how to be a success with your business. They just teach you how to be a doctor. And so when you get out of school, you open up an office, you don't know nothing about hiring staff, firing staff, training staff, how to do insurance, all this stuff, how to schedule appointments, how to talk to patients about what it is that you do, how to explain all that. They never told us any of that. So I took courses on that. And so my wife was my secretary, front desk girl at the time, and we just built a practice. Now in the practice now, actually my son runs it. Okay. Yeah. But I'm not even sure, 12, 13 doctors. We have an osteopath, medical doctor, doctor of physical therapy, about seven chiropractic physicians. We have massage therapists. We do a lot of aesthetics. So we have estheticians for skin and beauty care and things like that. We do a lot of IV therapy for nutrition. We do blood chemistry analysis for nutrition. We have a gym, a workout center. So patients can come in there and get either rehab, personal training, or just join and just do their own workouts. So it's like a whole holistic approach, but not just from functional medicine. You know, we also have the medical aspect in there with stem cells and things like that. So that this way, you know, I think that the doctors of the future or the let's say the practice of the future should be a combination of traditional medicine and functional medicine. And have the patient, you know, look at both sides and make a decision. And that both doctors should realize at one point, especially the traditional medical doctors, is that, you know, where they kind of like end off, that's where we begin. So, you know, medicine, traditional medicine treats sickness and disease. We treat health and wellness. So it's like when you get them over their sickness and disease, if you can, then they have to start learning, like, how do I take care of this body of mine? Because without your body, your health, you have nothing. So we worked from 1980 to where we are now. And now we're starting to do things with Indian River State College up in Fort Pierce, Florida. And we'll be working with the veterans and the special forces and the first responders, which I love to do. I mean, I can't wait to work with them because these are the true heroes.
Yeah, definitely.
And we're working on it in a way where, see, the VA hospital is I think 60 miles away. And so we have to create satellite clinics so to allow the veterans to come. This will be a satellite clinic because some of these vets have to wait 6 months to a year. They get treated. And so they have to travel. So here they come right in immediately. The way they have this thing work with the organization I'm working with, they're pretty cool. They're taking all these, like, let's say, veterans and really taking them, and they went through a lot of physical and mental abuse. And so you want to retrain them to get back into society. So a lot of them have a lot of mental emotional stress from what they saw and what they did and what happened. And they work with them as far as that goes. We'll do a lot of physical treatment with them. Try to get them so they can at least get back into society. Once they're at that particular point, there's another portion of the group that they now set them up in jobs or positions that they feel that they can do well with. So you take a you actually retrain some of these people, especially the special force guys. I mean, these guys are like Olympic athletes. I mean, the stuff that they wound up doing, bringing them back into a society where they're normal again, is kind of like a, there's a big cavern you got to jump over, because they saw things and did things that you don't do in society. You don't do when you're a family member, and you want these people to now go back from where they were, okay, combat veterans, to back into society. So that to me is going to be great.
Oh yeah, because that, I mean, that's, there's something about that can be incredible, because it's one of those few moments where you can genuinely see the impact of your own input.
Right.
And there's something actually really incredible when you're the person that's supporting somebody, and you see that sort of the way their mind and body evolves, and those simple steps that you guide them through, and the outcome just completely is 180 degrees for their life.
You got that. That's exactly why I do what I do. You hit the nail right on the head. It's like, I saw a quote from Socrates, and it's only a few years ago. And he said, "The closest you can ever get to God," I'm paraphrasing, "is to bring health to one's fellow man or woman." And to me, that's like, and I see that firsthand. I treat patients like every day. I treat patients 5 days a week, and they'll come in, they'll go, "Doc, man, don't ever retire. Don't ever, don't please. You help me so much." And it's like, you hear things like that. It's like, and this is coming, David, from people who've been in pain for like years. It's not like they, it's like, "Well, I just got a crick in my neck, take care of it." I'm talking about people that are having like all digestive problems, organ problems, because I had to learn how to do all these different things to work with people that had gallbladder problems or liver and things like that. So to work with them and see like the results they can get, because all I'm really doing is unleashing the power within the body to heal the body. I'm not healing anything. I'm not curing anything. It's just the body has the power to heal itself. It does it 24/7, 365 days a year for the rest of your life, as long as you give it what it needs, which is chemical, physical, mental, emotional. And your body keeps on like living and living and living and living. Not that you're going to live forever, but you want to make sure that the quality of your life and the quantity of your life are as great as it can be, and go out and help people. That's life. That's pretty much, if I can sum up my life that way, that's it.
I try to, why, what is it? So, like, if you look at where you've come and how you've evolved, you must have, I imagine, and I could have this wrong, but I imagine there were times when the very people that you were trying to learn from may have kicked back against your ideas or your outlook, if nothing else. But then there must have been times when you were seeing result and you're like, this can't make sense, because this is, I've been told they should do this.
Right.
So how did you deal with that when you were coming up against those things?
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. It was like, because I've seen tremendous amounts of lies throughout all the decades that I've been in practice. One of the biggest lies that they've ever told was cholesterol causes heart disease, and it doesn't.
I was going to come to cholesterol as well, because it's a
So,
fascinating one for me.
I'll give you like some quick pointers on it, so this way you'll know exactly what's going on. So when they start to link cholesterol to heart disease, now I'm just out of school a few years. This is like around the early 80s. And so I graduated in 86. And so I was out of school maybe 5 or 6 years. And so I'm hearing this and I'm into nutrition. So now I'm running blood chemistries and I'm running blood chemistries from the early, maybe 1980. So I used to see levels, okay, that are different than the levels today. Normal cholesterol levels in the early 80s, David, were between 225 and 325. That was normal, okay? And so I watched when they started to try to link cholesterol to heart disease, and I'll say that's where it was a total lie, was that they started to like try to lower cholesterol levels with diet. You can't do it with diet. In fact, the majority of your cholesterol that you, that's in your bloodstream is produced by your liver, 80% of it. And a very little dietary cholesterol enters through your diet, okay? And so maybe 20%, if that. So by reducing the amount of cholesterol that you take in, the body will just produce more. It's just, it's itself, it's a self-sustaining mechanism. So as they went, as they start to try to lower cholesterol levels, they couldn't do it with diet. So then they said, well, what we'll do is the liver produces 80% of the cholesterol. So what we'll do is we'll create something called a statin, which will prevent the liver from producing cholesterol. And so that's what they did. And they put people then on a, they kept on the low cholesterol diets. And when they did that, that was the worst thing they could have ever done because they changed the food pyramid. They put meats and stuff way up high. They didn't put it at the base anymore. And so, you know, everything that had to do with cholesterol was taboo. So cholesterol was found in meat, meat's taboo. Cholesterol is found in eggs, eggs are taboo. You know, cholesterol is found here, it's taboo. So they stopped, you know, allowing you to eat the things that you had to eat to survive. Because in actually in nature, God intended it this way, is fat is always found with protein. And the fat is the more, protein is the blocks, the building blocks. So you can't have one without the other. So God, in his wisdom, basically said, look, I'm going to have protein with fats all the time. So meats, protein, fat, chicken, protein and fat, fowl, protein and fat, fish, protein and fat, nuts and seeds, protein and fat, dairy, proteins and fat. Protein is always found with fat. You eliminate fat, you eliminate protein. Protein regenerates the body. Lack of protein degenerates the body. So now 30, 40 years later, you have all these degenerative diseases occurring with people that never occurred before. And it was all because, and they're on the statins and they're making it worse. And now the his, if I told you the purposes of cholesterol, you're going to laugh because it's like the very things that people are suffering from. For example, the LDLs, which they say are the bad cholesterol, is like, okay, LDLs, what's their purpose in the body? The body doesn't make things that are bad for the body. That's the one thing that doctors still don't understand. They think that they're more intelligent than the power that runs the body. They really think. They think that they more they have more knowledge and they understand the body more than the body does, even though the body uses 100 trillion cells and each cell goes through about 100,000 chemical reactions per second. They know more than the body, which is totally ridiculous. So when the body is like a, has a symptom, they try to remove the symptom. How stupid is that? The body, that's a warning sign from the body that something's going on. Trying to remove the symptom and hide it, that's the worst thing you would do. You wouldn't do that to your car. If the oil light came on, you wouldn't go into a you wouldn't go into a gas station and say the oil light's on. The guy goes, no problem, pops the fuse to the oil light and it goes out. He goes, okay, take off. You have no problem. You're gonna the car's gonna explode.
Or they drain the oil out for you.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of like it's really ridiculous. So the LDLs, the really the most important thing that it really, really does is it produces all your sex hormones. Estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. And 8 to 10 years after the statins came out, the erectile dysfunction mechanism came in. So everybody now has erectile dysfunction, especially because you're lowering the cholesterol levels to ungodly low levels. And then you're not producing enough testosterone because of it. And the LDLs are used to make the phospholipids that surround and encase the brain to protect the nerves from short circuit, which causes things like dementia, premature senility, Alzheimer's disease, which you see running rampant in today's world. It's not like, look, if you're 90, you have Alzheimer's or 85, I can understand coming from all the stresses and strains of life. But when you're 65, 70, you have dementia. That's my son-in-law's dad just passed away at the age of 74, but he had dementia, and he's had it for maybe 5 or 6 years prior. It was just, and so he had it already in his 60s. And of course, he was on statins. And the other thing that cholesterol basically does is that, and here's the, this is what they pin heart disease on cholesterol because it's built up on the arterial walls. They say, oh, but they don't tell you all the other stuff that's there, like calcium and everything else like that. So we should remove calcium from the diet as well. But the purpose of LDLs is basically like a patch-up mechanism. So in the bloodstream, if you're drinking and eating a lot of crap and having a lot of what they call these antioxidants running around your bloodstream, you literally cut the linings of the inner walls of the blood vessels and you scar them. And the minute you scar them, the body tells the LDLs, patch it up, just like you would do if you had a crack in, you know, your wall, you'd patch it up. So the more scarring happens, the more the LDLs have to be there to protect it, and it builds up year after year, decade after decade. By the time you're 50, 60, bam, now they're saying like the LDLs are the problem, it's high cholesterol. No, it's not. It's all the crap you've been eating. It's all this things you've been smoking. Maybe all the pollutants you've been taking in, unknowingly and knowingly, from the food you eat or from the places you live. All these pollutants definitely can literally cause a tremendous amount of damage to the inner linings of your blood vessel walls. And so that's how this thing starts. But it's not like LDLs, you're bad for building up on the walls. It's not protecting the wall. It's like somebody coming to protecting your house and somebody going out there and trying to shoot them because he's protecting your house. It doesn't make sense. But that's what they do. And cool. So over the years, I've been telling my patients now for decades, get away from the cholesterol. Don't take statins. They mess up your liver. They cause all the different things I just mentioned, premature senility or dementia, and you know, decreases your sex drive and everything else like that. It's totally ridiculous. And your hormones, which basically, you know, have a lot to do with the function of the body and also your physical appearance. So,
yeah, I was going to say, I don't remember exactly when I read it, but it definitely changed my outlook towards lots of food. And it was when I read that the largest organ in the body that uses cholesterol is the brain. And something like 23 or 25% of all the cholesterol in the body can be found in the brain. And at that moment, as soon as I read that, I was just like, then why on earth would you take less of it? If the one, you know, it's just like that just makes zero sense. That is literally like walking down outside with an umbrella, noticing it's raining, and then putting the umbrella back inside so you can carry on down the road and get wet. There was nothing about, and as soon as I read it, I started looking like, well, no, I must be reading this wrong. I must be misunderstanding something. But no, everywhere I looked when I asked, you know, how much cholesterol is found in the brain, it was always like something like 23% or 25%. I was just like, well, then you must want to consume as much like eggs as possible because they're high in cholesterol. And then it turns out eggs are possibly one of the most nutritiously dense foods you can eat in terms of, yeah. And like, but we're told not to take them. And it's just like, and then you learn, like you say, about LDLs, and you learn about how much fat is actually contained within the brain, and that the brain needs to be of a sort of high fatty substance for it to work correctly. And are you just like, this has got to be the craziest conversations that I've seen, because you have health practitioners who know how the body works, should at least know what percentages they are, telling you, no, that's not doing you any good. As it coincides with the largest rise in sort of degenerative brain diseases that we've ever seen in human history. Yeah. Oh, I, you know, and I'm not a rocket scientist, but I was born in 74 when we used to drink, smoke, eat fat, eat lots of eggs, and people were healthier and slimmer then than they are in 2024.
Exactly. I started to see that. Okay. And when this thing started out, again, I'm following, you know, the science. I'm looking at, okay, this is what they're saying. I got to like listen to it. And so when they start, they went from 325 to cholesterol. Now they want you underneath 2. Some insane doctors want you underneath 150. But It went from 325. I'm watching the labs, and like over a 2 or 3 year time frame, 300, 275, 250, 225. I'm going, they're going too low. They're going to cause disease. And so I kind of start to see everything. Now, here's another kicker too. This is like the other part that's really scary. Like you just said, they took you off a healthy diet. And then what they wound up doing, saying, okay, fat's no good for you. So around 84, 85, somewhere around there, they decided to go with the fat-free stuff. So they didn't have you, they want you to eat steak. They want you to eat eggs. You can eat chicken. I don't know where the eggs, you know, chicken comes from the egg. I don't know why you can eat the egg and not, you can eat the chicken and not the egg. I never figured that one out. But they just, you know, stay away from dairy, stay away from milk, stay away from cream, stay away from butter, stay away from cheese. It's like, I love these things. I got to eat these things. You kidding me? So they went and they said, okay, now no more fat. So they went to low fat, low fat fats, low fat cookies, low fat cakes, low fat everything. And so as they start to go through this, now I'm so really savvy with nutrition because I got into bodybuilding and I took my body from, I was like 165 pounds around 1980, 81. And within like, what was that? Probably about 5 or 6 years, I got it up to 240.
Nice. Okay.
But eating and watching, writing everything down that I ate. And every time I ate steak, felt phenomenal. Because back then the bodybuilders say, no, don't eat steak because, you know, they would take a testosterone. I wasn't. So testosterone is made from cholesterol. If they're taking testosterone, they can cut all the cholesterol out in their diet as much as they want. But I needed it. So, you know, with me training, I start to see like, you build muscle, you build strong, a strong body, and you get really, really strong. And so as time went on, I start to see like they were going the exact opposite way. They were saying, you know, eat low fat, no fat. So between 85 and 90, I started to see people start to get really big and heavy. And so high sugar diets, high carb diets. So I wrote a book back in 1989. How to eat more, lose weight, and never diet again. Because it was like, I watched what they were doing to the general public. And it's like, look, this is the way you have to eat. This is the way you have to exercise. This is the way you have to train your mind to condition your body to do whatever it is that you want to do. And so it was like something that I wrote. And I realized back then that that was going to happen. 40 years later, or, you know, when I was seeing this happen, 40 years later, look what's going on. Obesity. Actually, I always tell people, I said, we're not the United States of America. We're the United States of obesity. We are the most obese nation in the world. In the world. We're number one in everything else. Oh, not, I shouldn't say everything else. We were number one in military might. We were number one in economics. But, you know, to rank 30s, well, we probably rank about 40th in overall health now. For us to be there and be the most obese nation in the world, who's doing this? It's a combination of pharmaceutical firms, that the AMA, everybody is like just wants to be, make people and keep people sick. And so they just perpetuate these lives. And the sad part about it is people get worse and worse and worse. So over the 80s, I do blood chemistry analysis on patients. I say, okay, look, this is the type of diet you should be on. You should be on steak, meat, you know, eggs, dairy. They go, oh, my doctor told me I can't. I said, why? He goes, well, my cholesterol is high. So what's your cholesterol? He goes, oh, it's 200. It's not high. I said, do you like those things? Oh, I love those things. I said, let me ask you a question. Listen to the body. Don't listen to some joker out there that's telling you that you shouldn't. Those foods are healthy for you. Just listen to the doctor within your body, and they'll tell you or she'll tell you what it is that you should be. And that's the way you should go through life. Like, listen, like learn like you just did. Like you were saying, wait a second, this cholesterol thing is not making sense. And then you would turn around. And I can guarantee, David, just looking at it, I know you like steak and stuff like that.
I had steak and eggs just before we started.
That's one of my favorite meals, steak and eggs. That's what I'm going to have tonight, by the way. So, but it was like, you know, these people go, no, I love that stuff. I still need it. And they go, they were like, really? Like, you know, I'm on the statin. I'm like, don't worry about that. Cholesterol levels, it's normal for you to have this kind of cholesterol level. Now, if I back up, and when I first got to school, they go, oh, heart disease. Heart disease was caused by cigarette smoking, obesity, lack of exercise, emotional duress and stress. Those are the things, those are the factors that we said. You know, if you're overweight, have high blood pressure, things like that, that's what causes heart disease. It's not like, you know, your cholesterol. level is like high, and that's what caused it. And that's what they do now. It's just like, oh, you got high cholesterol? Here, take this statin. And they only, and there's, by the way, there's 74 different, if your cholesterol is high for you, there's 74 different combinations of glands and organs that can affect your cholesterol levels.
That's crazy, isn't it? Because it's the same and when they, sorry, I was going to say, it's the same when they went after salt. And again, I remember somebody, there was two things that happened to me that were, one was actually happened to me. I was suffering really bad migraines and I went to see a herbalist. I can't even remember what it was for. And I just happened to get into a conversation with her about having a headache. And she said, do you take salt? And I was like, no, not really. She goes, next time you get a headache, drink some salt water. And I was just like, and pretty much got rid of my migraines overnight. And I used to be on medication for migraines, but it pretty much fixed them straight away because I was just so low in sodium. And then it occurred to me that if you go
to... And what did they tell you to do? Stay away from salt, right?
Yeah, exactly. But and then it occurred to me by watching wildlife programs and going to zoos and stuff, that every single animal in the animal kingdom, at least salt land animal, has somewhere where it has to go and find minerals. And you have of these animals that go to lakes, ponds, you know, all over the world, who dig up the ground and eat the soil for the minerals, for the salt. And farmers all around the world leave salt blocks out for all of the mammals to lick salt. Humans are told, don't take salt. What, are we the only species in the world that's unique? This is so crazy.
This is what happened. Again, this is another insane thing that occurred back in the 60s and the 70s. They start to, you know, because the salt, when they give you table salt, what they wound up doing is, I use sea salt. It's called Celtic sea salt. We've been using it since 19. Actually, we knew the people who founded the company. And I've been on sea salt since 1980. And so I've watched people, you know, since that time, you know, do wonders with the sea salt. Now, the sea salt that we get, it's basically, here's the real cool thing. What they do is with white salt, they totally adulterate. They take every other mineral out of the salt except sodium and chlorine. And without going into a whole chemical thing, there's a thing called disassociation and association. So when salt water, when you drink just regular table salt, white salt, it breaks up immediately when it enters the body. It breaks up into a sodium ion and a chloride ion. But it's very easy for it to reassociate once it gets into the body. And once it reassociates, then it retains water. When it retains water, it causes your blood pressure to go high. Okay. Now, if you look at, let's say, Celtic sea salt, in that sea salt itself, there's approximately 72 minerals in the same proportion that they're found in the bloodstream of the body. Same mineral proportions, almost identical. And because if you're losing blood, they'll give you whole blood. Without that, they'll give you plasma. If they don't, they'll give you saline solution, salt solution. But Celtic sea salt has all the minerals in the same proportions that are found in your body. So when you take it in, once that molecule disassociates, because it's 82 pieces, it doesn't reassociate so easy. You follow? It doesn't make you retain fluid. It doesn't make your blood pressure go up. In fact, it'll make your blood pressure go down. So when they went on this total salt kick, like stay away from salt, they just depleted your minerals in your body. And I have people down here, because we're in Florida, in July and August, because people get a little bit crazy with their exercise. In July and August, they'll go out, they'll power down like, oh, I'll drink a gallon of water, I'll drink a gallon. It's like, did you take any salt in? Any sea salt? Well, no, I'm just drinking a lot of water. It's like, you're pushing out more minerals from your sweating than you ever do, doing anything else. So you need to take even more salt in the summer. I tell people, I said, look, we live right by the beach. So it's like, I'll go to the beach almost in the summer, I'm there every weekend. You know, during these months, I'm there like, well, I've actually been there the last few weeks myself, but I'm in the salt water all the time because I just want to bathe in all those minerals. So it's so, so healthy between that. And they always talk about vitamin D from the sun. The sun down here, you get perfect vitamin D.
Oh, yeah. So, I can imagine.
But see, that's what they do. They mess you up. You just see, like, between the salt, the carbohydrate, the high carbohydrate. Now, everybody's a diabetic. I mean, diabetes, type 2 diabetes is like taken off. It's like, it's bizarre. Actually, what they call Alzheimer's disease is type 3 diabetes now. It's
Oh,
just like a
right.
continuous diabetes, because you're damaging your brain. So you might as well just, realize that your brain is going to be, mush in about 10, 15, 20 years.
It does
So.
surprise me that general medical physicians haven't looked at the diets that we once were on. And so I remember reading this recently, and it was a statistic from 2022, and it said that when they took a standard receipt from 1972, it was something like 78% of the food that was purchased was fresh food that would be described as ingredients to go into a meal, or it was some form of meat and dairy. And
Right.
only 22% was processed. And they said literally almost decimal point to decimal point in 2022, it was 78% processed food and only 22% fresh food. But they said, but it wasn't just like fresh food that's ingredients. They say most people are just buying milk. So they're not even, and they said, like, if you go back to the 70s, nothing was processed. And when people went shopping, maybe with the exception of baked beans or some pasta or some rice, every ingredient in that shopping trolley, sorry, every item in that shopping trolley was an ingredient most likely for dinner that night. And
Yeah.
it's just like, and they say you flip it to where we are today, and it's the exact opposite. And it's just like, how do we not, like medical physicians, how do they not look at that and say, look, we've got this wrong because we've had a rise in all of these diseases that didn't exist, or certainly not didn't exist in the proportions that they do today, when we lived
Right.
that way at a time when 90% of the population smoked 40 a day,
Yeah,
and they were
I
still
agree.
healthier.
Yeah, no, I agree, because what you're saying is the truth, because I've lived it, I've seen it. In fact, when I was a pre-vet major, I was agriculture. So now I'm in this back in the 60s, I'm in agricultural college, and so I'm learning about how they grow crops, how they grow animals and chickens and everything else like that. And they said back then, they said that the food, if you look at the vitamin and mineral content of the fruits and vegetables and whatever was grown back in the 40s, it was about 20 or 30% higher than it was than in the 1960s. So you can imagine how bad it is now
Yeah.
from what you from 72 to 2022. It's insane. And it's getting worse. They're really trying to make, they're trying to make meat in a laboratory.
Oh.
They're literally trying to destroy people overall. It's really sad. And a lot of people are going to have to get up and just take a stand.
Why do you think they're doing it? Do you think it's actually a conspiracy here, or do you just think it's people, if we can push this agenda, we can make a shitload of money?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is now. That's exactly what it is. And there was a book. And this is now, I'm going back to 1973, 72. There was a book called Pills, Profits, and Politics. And I think it was written by two medical
I've
doctors.
heard of that
And they
book, yeah.
how bad it was back then. And now it's worse, even with this whole pandemic. And like the big cholesterol thing, like you're talking about now, and I'm not sure where your stand is on the pandemic and everything. But that was, it was a whole crazy situation, and the windup was it scared the crap out of people, and it really did damage to people's overall health. And what they and look, I can understand if you wanted to stay home during the pandemic, or you felt your health wasn't good. That's fine, but so th there's another lie that's out there that I'll basically I'll say I say that I feel like Christopher Columbus when he said the Earth was round. And everybody said, no, you're insane, it's flat. I kind of feel like Christopher Columbus, because even when I speak at a lot of chiropractic conventions for license renewal, if I teach, even if I one of the courses I teach is AIDS. They still have, it's still mandatory for you to take that. So when I teach the class and I tell the students, they're all doctors, I said, look, let me explain something to you right now. The theory, it's a theory, germ theory, that germs cause disease is totally a lie. I said, you got to get that. Bacteria and germs don't cause disease. Are they involved in the disease process? Absolutely, but they're not the cause of disease. And so they kind of like, oh, okay, I can like kind of figure that out. So that's the biggest lie perpetuated today. And so everything is about bugs and germs and stuff like that. And I tell people, and here's just an interesting thought, and you can look this up. Do you know how many bacteria are in on your body right now? People don't even know. They go, oh, thousand,
Billions
two
or
thousand.
trillions is something ridiculous.
40 trillion. Okay. I said, do you know how many viruses are on and in your body right now? I don't know. Try 40 to 400 trillion. And I said, so you're in a sea of germs. Germs are all over you. It's like being in the ocean and the guy comes getting close to you and go, no, don't get close to me. I don't want you to get me wet. It's like, well, you're in the sea, you're in the sea of water. You can't get wet. You already are wet. What are you talking about? And it's not the bacteria and virus don't cause disease. They're involved in the disease process because your immune system basically keeps all that them in check constantly. As long as you're healthy, you traumatize the immune system chemically, physically, mentally, emotionally, you're done. In fact, David, your whole body is an immune system. Your skin, your lungs, your kidneys, they flush out all toxins. Your liver flushes out all toxins. Every cell in the body flushes out toxins. Your lymphatic system flushes out toxins. So it's kind of like, that's your whole body is that. Your spleen, your thymus, your thyroid. It's, they're all part of the whole immune system. So if you keep that immune system like in perfect check, kills everything. It produces something called an antigen. Excuse me, an antibody. Antigen is the virus. They produce antibodies. And so you say, well, how many different viruses are there? I think there's maybe 320,000 different viruses. Maybe about 15 or 20 really cause disease. But our bodies are capable of making, as far as antibodies go, the lowest number I heard was 15 billion different ones. The highest number I heard was 10 to the 22nd power. So it's like, for every virus out there, your body has an armamentarium of antibodies to basically kill whatever it needs to kill when it needs to kill it, or put it where it's supposed to be in the body. Because bacteria and virus that live in the body act as a symbiotic relationship with the body too. They're not just there like to hang out. A lot of them do things that help reciprocate, improve the health of the body, as long as we keep them in check.
So, what is one of the things that you said is what is the true cause of physical pain?
The physical pain, it's any kind of damage to muscles, ligaments, tendons, bones, and nerves. Now, there are biochemical imbalances that can cause physical pain. Like if you have, a lot of, let's say, inflammation going on in the body from a really bad diet and you're overweight, you'll have a lot of, pain from inflammation. But most like if you say to me, they'll go like, I have severe pain in my knee, or pain in my ankle, or pain in my neck, or pain in my back, or wherever it is. That's usually from trauma, some kind of physical trauma that was never treated properly. So the muscles, ligaments, tendons, the ligaments hold the bones together. Tendons attach the muscles to the bone. And so, and the nerves literally cause the whole thing to move, and the joint itself dictates how it's supposed to move. So because we use our bodies constantly, regardless what, people say, well, I don't really do much in exercise. We need to do exercise. But then exercise can cause injuries because I watch people exercise and they don't do it properly. Well, they do exercise they shouldn't be doing. So you have to really look at the body and say, okay, this is what I have to work with. But most of the time, if it's like a knee or a shoulder, it's usually, a trauma to that joint. And the only way you're going to get it well is do what I call neuromuscular work on it, some therapy, and then exercise, and then the right nutrition. So.
It's quite fascinating because so when I'm not doing podcasts, I am actually working with head injury rehabilitation, and I also have a side business where I'm a hypnotherapist. So I'm a certified hypnotherapist in the UK. So I do a lot of head injury rehabilitation. So I have a very good understanding of sort of neuroplasticity and how when the brain gets impacted, things start to shut down. And that the brain has an incredible ability to heal itself, even if it's been damaged. Large areas of the brain can be physically damaged beyond repair. If you can recreate the neuro pathways through repetition, the brain adapts and adjusts to that, even though there's still clearly brain damage. So a lot of what I've heard over the years, I know it's just bollocks. It's just like, that's not how the brain works in practice, because I work a bit every day. I know that. I then, when I became a hypnotherapist, it was actually I wanted to do executive coaching and, you know, get people all fired up, motivated and inspired. And it just sort of turned out that didn't transpire as being the biggest demand for my services. And I mean, work is a bit quiet at the moment, but I ended up by accident working with people who had autoimmune diseases or issues, you know, such as celiac and stuff like that. And, or people with fibromyalgia and stuff. And I was just like, it started off with friends. I'd just be talking to friends. And I would notice just how stressed they were. And I was just like, I can fix that. I said, I can't. I still, to this day, I've never really spent too much time trying to figure it out. But my theory is, kind of runs along these lines, that you're either really stressed and the body is highlighting this to you by giving you some form of disease, or you have an underlying, say, prefix to that you genetically are prone to that disease, and stress exacerbates it and brings it to the surface. I don't know which is the correct order. I never really decided. For me, it was irrelevant. And then I realized that if I look at the human stress on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 is the maximum your body will permit before it starts giving you physical symptoms that says this has to stop. And if you're not going to stop, we'll make you ill, so you're forced to stop.
And I
would explain to my patients and the clients that if you have a good, healthy life, you might fall asleep tonight with a stress level of 3. But when you wake up in the morning, you should be reset to 0. But if you're continually compounding that stress, after about 6 months, or just you've had a couple of bad weeks, your boss is a real pain in the ass, your wife or your husband has been giving you a hard time, or you're getting divorced or something like that, well, you start riding at 10 and you go to sleep at 10. And when you wake up, you're already at 6. So by the time you go back to bed, it's 10 again. And then when you wake up in the morning, you're now at 8. And by the time you've stubbed your toe on the way out of the bedroom door, you're already at, yeah. Right. But as soon as you get past 10, it's a pressure cooker. And if you can't release that pressure, the body's going to, we're going to shut you down. That's how it works. So all I did was start getting people to relax, making a 10 minute session feel like they've had the longest, deepest 8 hours sleep of their life, and just talking them through a process of literally just letting steam out of a pressure cooker in their mind. And that's all your emotions going away. It's everything going released. And everybody is symptom free.
No, you hit the nail on the head. I'll explain some things to you that you were just like, you were just maybe questioning. once I started practicing back in 1980-81, I worked with an osteopath, and he was treating cancer patients from all over the United States. They would fly down to Florida, spend a month with us, and then he would do IVs, nutrition, and everything else like that. So now he was working for a Dr. Kelly, who was pretty much world-renowned at the time as far as nutrition went. And so Dr. Kelly had recommended the chiropractic care, which was the type of chiropractic that I do. It's called sacroiliocerebral technique. So this doctor said, okay, would you treat some of my patients, cancer patients? This is back in 81. So I said, no, of course, I would definitely treat them. So I was treating them. And I only treat them for maybe 2 or 3 weeks or a month, and they would go home. So one day I had a nice conversation with him. And I said, Doc, I said, let me ask you a question. He goes, what? I said, you know, all these doc patients that you send me, I said, they're pretty much like, you know, I'm a pretty upbeat guy. So I said, they're pretty like angry and negative. And I said, is they're like that because of the cancer? He turned around, David, he goes, no, that's what caused their cancer.
Yeah.
And it blew me away because at that time, I didn't really know too much about the mental approach, mental emotional. That's why what you do is kind of phenomenal, because if you can get somebody to retrain their brain, so to speak, that's really great. But it's like I saw that within a year or 2 years, I was going to teach a class on nutrition at one of the high schools. It was a nice night class. And nobody signed up for a nutrition, only five or whatever it was. But they said, now this is back in 82. They said, Doc, we have a class. It's a stress class. And there's about 40 people in there. Would you want to teach it? So I said, well, of course I would teach it. I didn't know anything about stress. I mean, I was out of school. Yeah, I was working. I started to have a family and everything was going, you know, fairly good. But I didn't really know too much about stress. So I went into the class and talked to these people. I said, well, what stresses you out? And they kept on, my mother, my father, my dog, my cat, my money, my wife, my spouse, whatever it is. It was like, I could list about 100 things on the blackboard of what caused stress. And I started to realize, you know, stress basically, you know, everybody in life, we all have this, you know, everybody, I don't care if you're male, female, black, white, it doesn't really matter. We all have one common denominator, and that's to survive. You either survive with the cat and the stick. And basically, once I realized that, I said, you know what? Stress is your inability to solve problems in your life. The exact opposite of success is your ability to solve the problems. And the problem with problems is not the problem, it's the inability to solve it, which is the problem. So you can go through a stress-free, not that you can go through a stress-free life, because you can't live with it and you can't live without it, but you can deal with it properly so you can either motivate yourself with the carrot or the stick to make things happen. And so that to me was like, if you can get people, and because a lot of times people say, oh, you know, I tried to help them do this. I want my husband to exercise. I want to do this. I say, I don't care what you want. Your husband's got to want to do it. You can talk about, I want to go on a diet. He ain't doing it until he wants to do it. So it's like, if you can condition, and part of my book is how to condition the human mind. You know, because if you're going to be successful in life, you got to learn how to condition your mind, because especially in today's world, you want to kill yourself every day you get out of bed. You get up in the morning, you want to kill you. It's like you watch TV at night, you put the TV on, you get stressed out. You go to a tent. If you watch the news, you can't win. I just like to watch like some sporting activities. To me, that's fun. It's a kind of game. And that's the way I look at it. Or how to cook.
Yeah.
I love the cooking shows. I don't like to cook. I love watching people who love to cook meals that I would like to eat.
There is something there is something fascinating about it, though. When you see a good chef throw some ingredients together and you're like, I can barely put a sandwich together.
There was one show. There was two guys. They go up to like different areas, like in the wilderness. And they'll like go in to walk outside, pick things, like different things that you would never even think you could eat, put together a total meal, whatever the animals they would hunt in that area or whatever the fish they would do, and just prepare everything. I was like watching this stuff. They were just great outdoorsmen. They just can make anything.
When you see those guys like bury an entire carcass in the ground on top of hot coals, come back five hours later and it's like the best pulled pork you've ever seen in your life. And I'm like, I burnt my toast this morning.
No, it's true. It all is. So So what you're saying is perfectly what I'm in line with, because, you know, my thing is when I talk to patients, I say, listen, you know, I can show you what to do. I can explain things what you should do. But if you're not going to do them, it's kind of like, you know, useless. And it's their mindset that's going to make that happen. And that's what happened with me. It was I didn't realize this until I started to teach all this stuff. They're like, okay, how do you be successful? You know, I want to be successful in my life. And success to me is not like material things. Success is, you know, what you're doing, how much you love life, how much you're helping other people, what you have, you know, things that money can't buy, like that family behind me.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
By that, the love and the caring and the inspiration and The two of them on this side right here, the ones on the right side, they now work in the office when school ends. One helps me with the patients, the other one cleans the rooms, gets everything ready, folds the towels, gets the gowns and all. So we're already training them, because that's what I do with my kids, because my daughter works and she's a chiropractor in the office. My son runs the place. He's a chiropractor and a medical doctor. My daughter does pediatrics and OBGYN stuff. So she works with the expecting moms and the babies when they're born, and kind of goes there and has a midwife sometimes. So everybody's like on board, everybody, and the whole family gets along great, which is really, and they all live like kind of around the area.
Well,
So it
that,
makes it,
yeah, well, that actually leads me to one of my favorite questions that I like to find an opportunity to ask everybody. You remember at the beginning, you said that your mum, you were leaving school and your mum was like, what are you going to do? And you're like, I'm going to be a mechanic. You didn't know what else to do. And that's what people did. And your mum was like, no, you're going to college. But the boy that looked at his mum and said, I don't know, I'll be a mechanic. If he was sitting in a room now looking at you with that picture behind you, what would he say to you?
He would say, follow your dreams and listen to your mother. No, you know what? My mother, she was tough on us. She beat us. I mean, I got beat. I would fight outside. I come home, I'd get beatings from my mother. Not just like easy beatings, like, vacuum cleaner pipes, wooden hangers. She'd break them with the first shot, keep on smashing you with the rest of the hanger. And, but she, my mother suffered. She was bipolar. I mean, I know that now. I didn't realize it back then, but she had this real strong love for us that I always felt. Whether she was yelling and screaming at us, or, but there was this love, there was this caring, and she always wanted us to do the best. That I do. So, when she said to me, "I want you to go to college," it was going to be, "Okay, Ma, I'll listen to you. Let's go and talk to the grade advisor," and we did.
Did your mum get a chance to see all of this?
Excuse me? Oh yeah, she's still
She's
alive.
still alive.
She's in a nursing home right now, not doing very well. But she was doing good up until maybe about a year or so ago. She's got dementia, and but she still knew who I was, my sister. She knows my kids to a degree. Not, she knows some grandchildren, but not the great grandchildren. So, but now she's it's pretty close. It's not going to be, maybe more than 5 or 6 months.
Okay, I'm
But
sorry to hear that, but I'm really pleased that she's got to see just this,
oh yeah.
everything that you achieved.
No, she was that. The thing was, she has been down. She went to move down here about 8 years ago, and she was being abused by my brother, physically, emotionally, and financially. And so we had to get her out of the house. So she came down here. She wanted to come, and she had her knees replaced. It's like a 91, 92 there. And so we would get through therapy and everything, and she was doing better. And then she was, I want to go home. I want to go home. I want to go home. And she really couldn't, because I could see the dementia was getting really bad. So we wound up putting her into assisted living up there near my sister, thank God. So she was, my sister was able to see her all the time. And the assisted living place was phenomenal. It was great. So she was there for a good 5 or 6 years, but then they said, look, she's getting, too weak, and she needs, more than we can possibly give. So, and that's where she is right now. But my sister's with her a lot. I try to FaceTime as much as we can. She says, but she's got to be there because my mom can't, pick up the
Yeah,
phone
of
emotionally.
course. I mean, it's fantastic. She got to see how, because it would have been very easier for her to say, okay, yeah, no, a mechanic's a good job. That'll suit you well. That'll take you through life. But instead,
It really was amazing, because had she not done that, I don't think I would have probably become a doctor.
No,
I think I would have
you'd have
become.
probably had a fleet of garages instead.
Exactly.
You'd have probably
Exactly.
still done all right, to be fair.
I'm sure. But I'm so happy what they did, what they did.
No, it's a phenomenal story. And just one last question, and this one is completely random. And again, I just like to ask it. Just using your imagination, imagine you had some sort of like magical time machine. If you could go back to any time, any place, any time, where would you go? What car would you be driving? And what would you be playing on the radio?
Well, I don't think I'd change anything. And the car I would probably be driving was a 1968 GTO Ram Air.
Nice.
And the song I would be playing would be Little GTO on the radio. But it's just, you know, looking back on my life, I wouldn't change anything because I know that tough times made me better. And the good times made me even better. Yeah. I'm getting a little bit choked up here, but.
No, it's good to recognize that. It's important that we recognize that because one of the worst things we don't. So here's another way of asking a similar question. If you look back on your life, what have you done well? What is it you do well?
The thing I do well is have a strong ethic.
Yeah.
Just help people. Just, you know, I want to be the best. In other words, like I always tell people, you have to have a purpose in life. And all my purposes, I have a purpose as a husband, I have a purpose as a father, I have a purpose as a grandfather now, I have a purpose to my patients being a doctor. So everything is like just all about my purpose and living my purpose. And that's my dreams. A purpose is your result that's intended or desired. So as long as your purpose is good, and I always believe this, I don't care, that's what helps me get through tough times. Because even when things are a little bit tough, and there's nothing really tough about my life now, David, to be honest with you. I'm like a lot of fun, but in the past when I didn't know any better, there were tough times when, you know, you're raising a family and, you know, you're with a wife and a spouse and you're trying to get through all that stuff and run a practice and push and realize, like, you know, you got to make this thing work. And the only way it works is with a purpose and goals. So I really conditioned my mind for success. That's what I wound up doing. And, you know, and before 1980, I wasn't really doing that. But when 1980 came and I started to study about how the mind really worked and how you can create whatever it is that you want to create in life by just following the right principles and listening to, you know, doctors and all kinds of people. I don't know how many, you know, success books I've read in the past, or, you know, all the Audible books I've listened to and the tapes. Some tapes I melted because I just listened to them so much. But it was just like, okay, how do I become successful? And I just took all that information and put it in my book, because out of all the books I read, there was always that same common thread that they always talked about: purpose, goals, and all the rest of the visualization techniques and idealization techniques. And I'd go through all that stuff and put together. You ever hear of Be Do Have?
No, I haven't.
So this is a cool formula, and this is what really made this really helped inspire me too. There's a formula. If you just look at it, it's like just B-E plus D-O, put a line underneath that, and it's half underneath that. So that's the three ways of living this. You're either, and regardless of who you are, what you are, you're either being something, doing something, and having something. Always. It never stops. They all have to be congruent. What you're being should be perfectly aligned with what you're doing, and then you'll have what it is that you want to have. So I tell people, I say, what do you need to be a millionaire? They go, well, I need to have $1 million. I said, no. To be a millionaire, you have to have the mindset of a millionaire. You have to be a millionaire first, do the things necessary to be a millionaire or have what it is that you want, which will be $1 million. So I always live with that whole philosophy. In fact, I have a whole list of things that I want to be. Did I already? I have it in now. When I say be, it's I am. It's not even like, yeah. It's not, there's no. Yeah. And all the things that I need to do in order to be that person, and that's what I want to have. These are my goals. And that's how I go through life. I just look at that, and I look at things that I've accomplished. I look at things that, like, I'm halfway there. I'm looking at things that I got a long way to go. And it's like, okay, it makes me happy every day because I'm being something, I'm doing something, having something, but it's all congruent. And that's what makes everything so much better. It's like, you know, if I'm being a spouse to my wife, Okay, I have to do the things that a spouse does for a marriage, and you'll have a happy marriage. And that's the way I look at it, with my wife, with my kids, and everything else like that. And if anything's going wrong, I got to look and see, like, am I being a good spouse to my wife? She'll tell you no half the time. But she knows. I mean, we're together for, like, almost 44 years. So there's something to be said for being with the same woman for that length of time. But, we know each other like a book. So we know exactly what's going on in our minds. And she can tell if I'm not happy and vice versa. So we just keep on building on a relationship. And it doesn't stop. Love is a commitment perpetuated by action. That was when I first realized, that's what love is. We fall in love with somebody. It's not a feeling. Feeling, you can say I love you, and 10 minutes later you want to choke on to death. But that's not the way love is. Love is it's a commitment perpetuated by action. So that's how I live my life. It's like I make a commitment and then I just keep on. That's another thing that I really feel it's important. When you say something, you want to do something, you just do it. You just say it. You just say, I don't talk to people, I'll try to do it, I'm going to do it. Either I'm going to do it or I'm not going to do it. So but it's that's the way I kind of go through life. That's what I love about life. It's like you can perpetuate your life and keep it going and growing. And so I'm looking forward to having some of my grandkids in the practice. I'm looking forward to having their kids possibly sooner when they also in the practice. So
that is a perfect place to stop. And I love that line. Love is a commitment perpetuated by action.
You know when I learned that? I was going to this Christian church, and I got close to the pastor. He was a patient of mine. So he comes in one day and he says, "Oh, we're going to be doing this talk on love." So and relationships. And he goes, love isn't a feeling. And so up until that time, he said, "Oh, I love this or I love that." So no, the real, true love, agape love, it's not a feeling. It's a commitment perpetuated by action. So when I said to my wife, "I do," says I'm committed to me to be her spouse for the rest of my life. And it's going to just be the actions going to speak so loud you can't hear a word that I'm saying. As I always tell people, it's like actions where it is. You can tell me everything you want to tell me, but if you don't act on it, it's, I can't listen to a word you say because the actions speak so loud I can't hear a word you're saying. So.
That's perfect. Thank you very much for your time. It's really appreciated.
Thank you too.
So there. It's Dr. Seema, and thank you very much, as always, for listening, for watching. And I'm just going to leave it with the line, love is a commitment perpetuated by action. And as always, wherever you are, whatever you believe, please take care and be blessed. And thank you.